Hey everyone, it's Michael. If you haven't heard, we have just launched the new Union Pro Mentors program where you can take office hours with pro players from top leagues, get world-class coaching, do mindset workshops, have video breakdown sessions, get help with college recruiting, join parent education portals, and so much more, all exclusively for goalkeepers. It all launches Monday, October 23rd, so be sure to join Union Premium risk-free to take advantage of all there is to offer. Go to unionsports.com/join or the Union GK community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks again for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from West Hollywood, California. With me from Woodland Hills, California. She was not blown away by the Santa Ana wins last week. The one and only 99 World Cup winner, Saskia Weber. And joining us for part two of this amazing podcast that we started with part one with a player, we got the one and only from Racing Louisville, Sergio Gonzalez. What's up, dude?
Not much. Thank you guys for having me again. I always love coming on and chatting with you. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. And it takes a lot to blow me away, Mike.
Well, hopefully some of Sergio's clips today will blow you away.
There you go.
There's a good segue right over there. So Serge, we were talking a little bit about it. Obviously, we were talking about Katie, you know, being at the NWSL championship, you know, doing the skills challenge. And I was just kind of talking before the show started about the fact that it's really cool that they now have these different events going on during the championship week, almost making it kind of like an all-star week, which makes these players kind of empowering them and allowing them the opportunity to meet fans from all over, especially like youth players and parents, like, you know, who came to the fields to meet them.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think that's the one thing I love about the league is the fan engagement and the fact that the players are accessible to the fans, and it's not too corporate and not too stuffy, I guess. I just love that piece to it, and to see that skills challenge, you know, added to the championship weekend was really cool. I think, you know,
yeah. Can we talk about
continues to evolve?
What was it? Was it Didi that scored in the breakaway challenge?
Did she?
Yeah. No, I think it's great also because, you know, just because your season ends and you're not in the final for the players, they're still engaged. They're brought in, they sit on forums, they get the skills challenge, they're involved in, like, you know, the meet and greets, the parties. And so they're still accessible and involved. It's not like, okay, you lost in the semis or you didn't make the playoffs, bye-bye. You know?
And I really want to say this, you know, shout out to the league because they really made a great job. I got the good fortune of going down there to San Diego, you know, for the events and everything. They really made it feel like an event celebrating the league and not just celebrating, you know, Gotham and OL Reign for making the championship. I mean, the amount of not only NWSL players that I met there, but also GMs and corporate people, just everybody was there celebrating the league. And I think that's just massive, Serge.
Yeah, it is. And I think you've seen the growth. And I think this is just another layer they're adding to it, which is awesome. And, you know, for the players to have that opportunity to go there. And I think there's probably worse places they could spend a weekend in San Diego. So I think, you know, that adds to it, too. But it was exciting. I know just talking to Katie before she went, she was excited to be part of it. And it was fun. I was following, somebody was streaming it on X. So I was able to see little bits and pieces of it. But it was good to see the throwback shootout come from the old MLS days where you're starting
from
30 yards out and dribbling in. I was like, this is great.
I remember that so vividly. The old MLS, and for people out there that are too young and don't know, just Google it.
I worked with, you know, in the same building as Todd Yeagley, who played in the MLS. I worked for Brian Mazenoff, and we were able to track down an old shootout one day. It was hysterical. I mean, it's just what a unique way for them to end ties. And now it's just now we just go for draws. So not nearly as fun.
I think at the time, I think they were trying to, you know, replicate, you know, like the penalty shootout in hockey. So they were like, oh, well, we'll do it just like they do it in hockey.
But it'll But it's exciting. It gives the goalkeeper a little bit more of a chance. Exactly. I always thought the time was a little short. I'm a goalkeeper, you know, but I think they were trying to find a different solution than a shootout, period. Because, you know, there's so much, you're either on one side or the other side if you like PKs or if you don't.
I'd rather do that than PKs. That's me. I've never been a big PK fan. I'm also like small, so it takes
you don't
want to
mimic hockey too much where they take players off the ice. So, and then you end up like with 2v2 or 3v3.
Yeah.
but by the way, everybody, before we kind of get into all this, Sergio, like there was a massive goalkeeping contingent at the championships. There was actually an Uber that was literally dubbed the goalkeeper Uber because it was all the goalkeepers coming together. It was like, it was like Lisa Cole was in it. Jill Lloyden was in it. Like Kaylin Sheridan, like all these people were all in the same Uber.
I love it.
That's awesome.
The
all
union.
The goalkeepers rolling in together. Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
Strong showing. That's good. That's what we like.
And speaking of that, actually, Serge, you know, one of the really cool things is that, you know, talking to Katie over there at Championship, she was talking about the fact that, you know, you guys have such a strong community, you know, of goalkeepers, and Liv obviously said it, you know, last week in regards to the community of goalkeepers, the pool of goalkeepers you had at Racing Louisville. Obviously you had some injury issues, but why don't you talk about how you were able to kind of integrate so many goalkeepers into your program throughout a season?
Yeah, it's been, I think one of the things that I really wanted to embrace when I came to Racing was to create a goalkeeping unit there and really make it different and unique. And I think we have some moving parts that allow us to kind of help us at times. I mean, we did have some injuries, which was unfortunate. So we had a couple people popping in and out. At one stage, I had to jump into at the end of a 5v5 because Liv dislocated her finger. So that was like, that's not happening again. So we have an academy with us. So I was able to bring in some of the boys to come in and help us at times, which was really unique. And just to add a different piece to training, which was good. So, you know, between Katie and Liv being there from the beginning, Jordan came back from her loan earlier. So she was with us for a little while, and then she had ended up getting injured and is now back training, which is fantastic. So really excited she was able towards the back end of the season to get back out there. We had Kelsey Doherty that was with us for a short period of time. She's at Celtic now. And then Hill came back in, got injured, came back out, and then back in again, and now she's over in Australia. So for me, it's about, you know, the environment and making sure that it's, one, they're enjoying themselves, two, that the standards are high, and that we're getting better every day. But it's not a grind, and it's not boring when they get there. We're doing the same things over and over again. It's to try to create, you know, an environment where they're thriving and they can feel the development. They can feel good about what we're doing. So I'm excited and lucky to have, you know, the group that we have. I mean, I'm really, really fortunate and makes my job and makes showing up to work every day a lot of fun. And they all challenge me in different ways, which is great. And I think it's important to create an environment that challenges them in different ways. So we try to be unique in what we do and try to add little pieces when we can.
You know, I was just about to say, you know, say Susk in regards to like what Sergio was talking about. I don't know how you feel. You know, obviously you've played at the highest level. You know, when you have a group of multiple goalkeepers all pushing each other, I just feel like it just creates just a more productive environment than when you just have a couple goalkeepers training in isolation.
No, absolutely. And you know, you get that kind of, when you get a good core unit together, that you get that us against them mentality in training, which is awesome. You know, it raises the level of the field players, you know, depending on what you're doing. And then if somebody does go down with an injury, you don't feel such a mat, like you don't get worried, or the team doesn't get worried about a drop off in level and intensity. And when you have a core unit that's just clicking and training so well together.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into this topic because this is obviously really cool because we got the player's perspective last week. Now we're going to get the coach's perspective right here. We're going to be talking, guys, again, IDPs and exit interviews. We talked about it with Liv last week. So we're going to talk about it more from the coach's standpoint. First off, Serge, why is it important as a coach to maximize your interviews with your players?
Because I think communication and being open and letting players know where they are is so important. And I think allowing players to also talk about where they think they are so that we're all on the same page. I think just having clarity and communication is huge. And I think, you know, allowing them to see where they've grown as well, because I think sometimes we're in that, you know, what's next, and we don't reflect enough and allow them to see the growth. And I think exit interviews are a really good opportunity to say, look where you started and look where you finished and look where we can continue to go. But also, what do you think? And I think that's the biggest piece for me. And I think, Suski, it's probably been the same for you in college, where it's like, how many times have we sat with goalkeepers and you have to drive the entire conversation and they're just kind of sitting, you drove me crazy. So now I want them to be the driver, because at the end of the day, it's their development and it's their development plan. And they need to be, it's not, part of it is a little bit of what I think and where I see maybe areas of strength and weakness, but the biggest piece is, where do you see yourself? Where do you want to go? How do you want to develop? And I think it's important to empower them to be able to know that they're the driver in this development.
Yeah, it goes back to that self-coaching. And it's like, are you developing goalkeepers that are aware, that are cognizant of their deficiencies, their strengths, and how they've improved, and able to verbalize that and really be honest with themselves? And I hate those conversations where it's just like, well, how do you think you're doing on this? Or how do you think? And they don't really, it's okay. Well, it's all right. You know, you want your goalkeepers to really be able to kind of pick themselves apart, because at the end of the day, in the middle of a game and it's in flow and something happens, they have to be able to, in their head, know really quickly what they did right, what they did wrong, and how to adjust it on the fly. And that, you know, to see that in goalkeepers and that development, like I said, it's self-coaching. You have to be able to do it as a goalkeeper. I don't want to give you your answers. Like, if I ask you a question, don't look to me to give you the answer unless you really don't know. Like, there is no wrong answer in a sense. Like, just talk to me. Let's figure it out.
But I feel like, you know, just kind of getting onto that, Susk, I believe, and I'm just going to use an example of just like doing the pro mentorship on the union platform right now. Like I've been taking multiple meetings with different types of players from different environments. And a lot of them is me teaching them how to self-evaluate, because no one's ever really taught them how to self-evaluate. So like I show up on the Zoom with them for the mentor session for the office hours. And they're like, hey, I'm like, okay. I'm like, all right, and they're waiting for me to give them everything. And it's like, no, I'm here to help you, but you've got to share what you want. And now, and I need to know like where you feel you are, where are your strengths and weaknesses, and all that sort of stuff. So Serge, go ahead,
Serge. I also think you have to get out of that fear. Like some, especially younger goalkeepers, like they don't want to say anything. They don't want to point out their weaknesses. They don't they don't feel comfortable talking to their coach and explaining what they saw and why they did something, like a certain situation, and self-evaluate and say, like, I was just having a meeting with an office hour with a parent, and we were talking about why his son did a certain thing on like a build out from the back. And the explanation made total sense. But when I said, well, what he got yelled at by the coach. And so I was just like, but did he explain himself? Like, you know, did he say, well, this is what I saw, and this is why I bypassed this line, which was the right decision from what I like all the information I was given, you know, but he was, there's that fear, and he didn't say anything. He just took it. I'm like, you have to be able to have that conversation with else you're not developing. You know, it's not what I say is the right way. It's, let's talk about it.
But that's why I think, you know, Sergio, like these IDPs, putting together these templates for these IDPs, especially at the foundational ages, when you kind of need to teach them how to self-evaluate, is so important.
Absolutely. And I think it goes hand in hand with video. So then you're watching video more intentionally. You're watching certain aspects. And I think, you know, even for our environment, we don't have a reserve league. So Katie was Iron Woman this year, played every minute of every game, in the Challenge Cup as well. What is the basis of development for now are 2, 3, and 4? It's the IDP. that's how they're gauging how they're improving, is I have to make sure that we're meeting enough so that they see all the work that they're putting in, that they see the growth, because sometimes that gets lost, I think, in the weeds a little bit, because we're always focusing on the team and we're getting ready for the next game and the next game, that when they don't realize, one, how much they've helped us because of how much better they're getting, right, but also take a step back and look at how much you've grown. So I think the IDP becomes so important, especially with video, like I said just a few seconds ago. Now they can watch it with more intention instead of just watching the video. And I mean, you heard from Liv last week, she comes in with timestamps. When we have a video session, I ask them, what videos do you want to watch? And make sure you come in with something to talk about, or we're going to sit there and stare at each other for however long we need to, because I want to know what they feel they need, they're seeing. And then from there, we can have a conversation. I'm not going to be the driver, because I'm not the one that's in the goal. I'm not the one that's developing. You have to kind of take the driver's seat and tell me what you're seeing and how can I help you?
Yeah,
I literally just had that conversation with a young player in an office hours, and obviously it's a little bit different because it's not a goalkeeper that I work with in my personal environment here, that, you know, they live somewhere else. But like, breaking kind of everything down, like, you keep it really simple though, Serge, because like, we looked at the template, obviously, you know, and filled out one from Liv last week, and you broke everything down into technical, tactical, physical, and psychological. Why just these four components?
I think those are the four major components, and I think, you know, I've also got to look at, what does the club want from the goalkeeper? What does the head coach want from the goalkeeper? So I think you can, and I also think, to make it something that the players can use and feel comfortable with, it has to be simple. If it gets to be too complex and there's too many layers to it, I think it loses its value because there's just too much going on. So this is kind of something, a project in talking to different coaches and things like that, and different opportunities over COVID, that I was able to kind of start to put together. And then obviously coming into racing and understanding what the club wants from their goalkeeping and what I feel is important for goalkeeping, we're able to put some things together and use this as kind of our template. I've actually met with our academy as well. I was just talking to Luke Spencer, who's our director of our boys academy, about how we can, you know, help implement that into the boys, to help them into the boys academy, to have just a little bit more of something for the goalkeepers to see, because I think there's a lot of development plans for outfield players, but there's not as much emphasis outside of goalkeeper coaches with goalkeepers.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, one of the things too, is that, like, you know, as Liv was talking about last week, you know, Susk, is that, you know, she before, okay, so Serge, you saw the episode, but she's like, you handed her this thing in preseason. She's a non-roster invite. And she's like at TKI, you know, with like Kaylin Sheridan and things like that. It's like, hey, fill this out. How do you feel you are on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being like an NWSL, like world-class player. You know? And she's like, I don't want this guy to think I've got a big head, you know? So.
I know. And I love that she was like, and Kaylin's like, I'll fill it out. I'm like, oh my God, like, what a debacle that would have been.
The reason I do it is because I want to know what they think and how they feel, because it works two ways too. I could also, there might be areas where I think they're good and they don't think they're good.
Right.
But I also think, especially for some of them coming from college into the pros, I don't think sometimes they grasp how big of a step it's going to be. So I always like to do, and I'm sure Liv told you, like halfway through preseason or towards the end of preseason, rate yourself again and see where you feel like you are. And then we do it again at the end of the season, because I do think then they recognize, wow, I've gotten better and I am at that level. So it's kind of like where I think I am, whoa, reality. And then, hey, I've been in this environment now for 9 months and I feel the growth and I am better in certain areas. So it also lets me, again, see where they feel their strengths are and where they feel their weaknesses are, so that as we start to work together, I can understand how they think a little bit, which I think is important as well.
Yeah.
You know, as I'm looking at this, you know, right over here, and Susk, you know, Sergio brought up a really good point in regards to a lot of the times, you know, our self-belief in ourselves, whether it's positive or negative, can actually not be the reality. Because we either hold ourselves to a certain standard or don't recognize what the standard is.
Yeah, I mean, and I also think it's contingent on where you are mentally at that time as well. you know, like, and I know this sounds simplistic, but if you just came off a training session with TKI and you got your butt kicked and you sit down to, you know, and you're out there with Sheridan and you sit down to fill out a form and you look at it so in the immediate and not in the bigger picture, you might just hammer yourself. And it goes both ways, you know? And so you have to learn how to kind of take the bigger picture and really break down training and playing over a period of time and really look at, you know, what are the weaknesses? What are the strengths? And be honest with yourself and go from there. It's not just like, oh, I had a bad day yesterday, so I suck at breakaways or whatever, yeah, or crosses, you know, like really say, all right, I had a rough time, but why? And learning how to look at, you know, if I take like LB, for example, like, you know, we had to break down that, you know, she was overplaying the near post. Of course, she's going to kill me because if she starts next year, now you know. But she was overplaying near post on certain balls when they were too far on the flanks. And this was a consistent thing. And I think that, you know, it was seeing that progression and her actually being able to see video and then midway through season for UCLA, realizing that she was changing her positioning, not just because maybe she got scored on one of them, but she is fixing it. And you have to be able to see that growth as well. It's not what happened like today. It's over time.
You know, I think, you know, one of the things, Siska, that you just brought up right there, you know, Sergio, that I wasn't even thinking about is that, like, as a coach, how do we make sure that a goalkeeper doesn't rush this or, you know, come to some immediate conclusions based on their emotional state at the time? How do we go, hey, give this to me a week from now or something along those lines so they really take time with it?
Yeah, and it's a conversation piece too for me, yeah, because then it breaks the ice a little bit. Why did you rate yourself this way? Why do you see it that way? I actually see this. And I think, one, it allows you to see where they see themselves. But then for me, the next piece is now it allows us to have a dialogue and start to talk, because I think that's really important. Because again, I think they have to be the driver in this. So there's got to be some whys. It's not just me reading this paper and going, okay, great, this is where you see yourself. It's like, all right, we've never worked together and I've only watched you a little bit. Now let's have a conversation and let's start to talk. So now I can kind of understand why you see things the way you see them. It helps me now when I'm starting to plan training sessions and, okay, I can see, you know, how much of a thinker they are, you know, how detailed they are. So it kind of works, you know, twofold. For me, looking at it, you know, I think it's a good way to start to develop a relationship, start to develop that being comfortable talking about these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you said that. And you know, Susk, I love the fact that like all of this is broken down here. So like you explain what all of this is and then you get the template here. Because I've seen so many young coaches just hand something like this, right, Susk, to like a youth player. And there's no context for what this all means.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be you'll get this back so many different ways. It has to be explained kind of like what you're looking for. You'll get kids that'll put one word answers to kids that'll write you like five paragraphs. So like there's got to be some guidance a little bit here. Like crossing, good. You know what I mean? Like that's not helping anybody. You know, so
and I've got four goalkeepers who all look at this thing completely differently too. I've got my thinkers. I live and Jordan Bloomer are thinkers, and then they're very deep in their answers. And then others that are straight to the point, which is okay. When Kelsey Doherty was with us, it was like two words, and I'm like, that's okay. This is your.
Right.
As long as there's a why to this, this is your process, mm-hmm. but it has to be clear because, you know, you go to effective actions. For me, every goalkeeper is going to be different. Right? We can't have a cookie cutter. So are you effective in what you do? My job maybe is then to clean it up a little bit to make sure that you're not putting yourself in a position where you're going to give, you know, force an error because of the way you're doing something. But your catching, Michael's catching, and my catching might look a little bit different. Is it effective? Great.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where sometimes, especially for younger coaches, we get caught into like, it has to look like this.
No, exactly. Like, I'll bring LB back up, actually. I love you. Her distribution with her throwing was unorthodox, but it was so effective. And she's so strong with her distribution out of the back with throwing. I mean, she can one hop to midfield, like on it, like as a dart, like everything. But if you looked at it like from a technical standpoint, like it's a little unorthodox, but it's effective. Yep. So I'm fine with it. You know what I mean? Like, and then if you took Hannah, she couldn't get the like the strength out of a throw that, and we had to really tweak her technical way, like kind of rebuild it. I'm just using Hannah as an example. Rebuild it technically so she was getting the most out of it. But I'm like, don't mimic LB because she's perfected this way for herself and it's effective.
Yeah. You know, and one of those things, you know, right there, Susk, that you brought up too, and Sergio, you brought up as well too, is that I think a lot of times, a lot of young coaches that use an IDP to create a goalkeeper in their image as opposed to create the best performance from that goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And especially at the club environment, especially at the youth club environment, where I just think, you know, the micromanaging at 9, 10, 11 is just, it's just, we need to stop. We really do.
Yeah. I think you've got to let them grow and figure things out. And I think your job is to guide and to make sure they're not going too far off the, you know, off the path, and making sure from a technical perspective that there are some pieces to it, you know, nose over toes, you know, their body, their elbows are off their body line, little things like that, but hand positioning of things, your hands are, some are bigger, some are small. There's no perfect way to do it. And I think even if I look at the four goalkeepers that I work with, all of them have little pieces because of their different strengths. You've got Katie 6'2", 6'3". Mm-hmm. And it's going to look a lot different than Jordan or Hillary, who are about 5'10", 5'11", in terms of what their set position looks like, how they distribute their weight. Katie sometimes is a little bit wider because she's a little bit longer. Their levers are a little shorter, so they're a little bit more explosive. So you have to look at the different pieces. And especially for the youth goalkeepers, that goalkeeper could look like a different person the next year because of a growth spurt or something like that. So,
That's so true.
To work within what they have and help them and guide them and let them kind of figure things out and just make sure they have the tools and they know when to use the tools. Each tool might look a little different for each goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt like with younger coaches out there and stuff, and with you and you're working in that developmental stage, don't take away their natural athleticism and abilities because you're so stuck in the way things have to be or have to look. Because those are their strengths, their natural movement. And you can tweak little things. Like there are technical things, like we said, you know, like set position and so on and so forth. But you have coaches that basically look at this sheet and say, well, this is where you're supposed to be positioned. This is how you're supposed to move. This is how you're supposed to go to for a cross or for a through ball and everything. And sometimes you're actually doing a detriment and taking like hindering the natural athleticism and ability that a goalkeeper has instead of heightening it and tweaking it to make it even more special.
You know, and you know, one of the things that I want to kind of bring up with these IDPs, you know, Serge, you know, at the youth level at least, and I apologize that I'm focusing on the youth level, but so many people out there are involved in the youth game, and I figured it's important. Is that I think a lot of times with these IDPs, coaches give them to them, you know, give them to the youth players, you know, after ECNL showcase or whatever, take it home, and then fill this out, and it's like. And mom and dad did this.
Oh my God. I knew you were going to say that.
But it's true though. It's true though. And you can tell.
Or Kaylin Sheridan does it.
Yeah.
But I still think it's a funny story.
That's actually a different thing. I think getting an outside peer's perspective or an outside coach's perspective on an IDP is actually great.
Yeah, that's not bad, but your parents, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're reading it and you're like, you don't even know how to spell these words. How are they out there?
And for goalkeeper parents out there, I'm not saying don't be involved in the process, but you know, this is something they should do and you can review it afterwards or whatever, but let's be honest, who's going to be more biased towards the goalkeeper than the parents of the goalkeeper?
You know? Yeah. You get it back and it's all like fives and fours. You're just like, and you know, you can't even like catch or reach, you know, get to the crossbar. Okay.
And it's not a report card. It's a tool. Yeah. That's the funny part is like, just, and that's why even for ours, I don't write anything in these. They're theirs. And if they choose not to value it, then it is what it is. But I think it's such an important piece that, you know, even this slide that you have up now is more of, again, a conversation piece. What's going well? What questions do you have within these different topics? How do you feel about them? Are you struggling with something, or do you feel like this has really grown? And it allows us to kind of talk through some things. And again, yeah. I think it's when you're watching video, now you're looking back at this, you know, if it's collapse dives, let's say it's just, you know, what's my weight look like? Am I getting over my knee? Am I getting my hands out? I feel really good with this. This is an area that's grown. With Liv, we worked a lot on her drive and her push. She was kind of going up to down. So we talked a lot about, you know, how are you loading? What's that step look like? Do you feel like you're getting more push? So it just allows you to elaborate on where you think you are with these things, or if there's something that you really aren't, it's not clicking, you know, that we can have a discussion about, and we can layer into your IDP and get some, you know, get something out of.
You know, you added some stuff in here, you know, Sergio, that I hadn't even thought of in an IDP, and it's absolutely fantastic because it's so important. You've got prep touch in here and you got throwing in here. Two areas that I rarely see in IDP templates that I've been seeing lately. You know, throwing is a lost art, as Suskie always talks about.
It's, like, I was just going to say,
and it drives me
on that train, Suskie, with you.
Drives me crazy because I would take the UCLA goalkeepers, and we'd set up like little goals and stuff like that, and we'd work on distribution. And so I'd be like, prep touch, and then let's, you know, and like 9 times out of 10, they couldn't hit the little goal, right? And I'm like, okay, same ball here, throw it. Like, you know, and boom, right on point, boom, right on point, boom. Why aren't you throwing this ball? It's getting there in the same time, but now it's getting there as like dart, right on target, right where it needs to be, with a backspin, slows down in front of your player's feet and everything like that, instead of missing this 9 times out of 10. And it's just throw the ball. Like,
yeah. I mean, growing up, we learned to throw the ball about 10 different ways. That
absolutely, the side, the baseball skip, everything.
I'll get kids at 14, 15. They don't know how to throw a ball.
Like, look at, okay, I will go back to Timmy Howard, the goal to Landon Donovan on the outside when he brings down the cross. He comes up to the top of the box and he throws that ball. One skips into Donovan on the outside, down, goal, you know, and everything. And it's just like, it was genius because had Tim taken that ball down and tried to half volley it, roll it to himself and then kick it or anything, that goal would have never happened, because the time it would have taken to do that, that second would have changed everything in that moment. But taking that ball down, just throwing it into Donovan's feet and everything, boom, on the goal. And I'm just like, people, you got to throw the ball.
Yeah.
You know, No.
But I mean, I know
we have like a whole podcast about this.
Yeah. The lost we opened of throwing.
I mean, you're like, I mean, that adds into like 0 to 18 yard service, 18 yard plus service. You know, I mean, like short form for service versus long form service. The prep touch one I want to get back to though, because this is, I think, something that's really important to have in there, especially as you get into the higher levels, because it's going to determine the angle of that pass, how much time you have, all those sorts of things. So why, Sergio, do you make it like right after it's throwing and prep touch are the first two ones that you put in that technical?
Yeah, because I look at it as kind of like the logical, all right, here's the throwing. And then in order to pass short or pass long, you've got to be able to set the ball to be able to do that. So I think it's how comfortable you're getting the ball out of your feet, especially in the NWSL with how much teams press. If that prep touch isn't right, you're not playing it anywhere except out of bounds or into your own goal, because there's so much pressure. So I think it's really important for them to understand, if I'm going to play a short pass, what does that touch look like? If I have time and I can go long, you know, Katie loves to roll the ball out. To her prep touches sometimes out of her hands. What's that look like? Are you setting yourself up so you can actually strike? Are you rolling it too close to you so that you can't stride out and be able to hit it? So I think it's important to recognize kind of the setup to the pass. So I kind of tried to layer things in a thought process order of, all right, throwing. And then in order to pass short or pass long, what's that setup look like for it?
Yeah, the importance behind that is just why are teams pressing so much? Because the prep touches and the passes aren't good. Like, that's why. And I mean, all right, analysis had him, but that's it. Hey, high press. Because not, maybe 7 times out of 10, you're going to get a turnover and you're going to be on goal right away. So that is why.
That's part of the scouting report.
Absolutely.
If not comfortable with the ball at their feet, if they play it back, go.
So yeah,
that's why
absolutely.
I think it's important for them to be able to play different types of passes and be able to solve pressure. You've got to be able to have a good first touch. You've got to be able to manipulate the ball. So I think it's an important piece that just like it would be for outfield players, it is just as important for goalkeepers.
Yeah.
So here now we get to the part where the parents can fill everything out with their glowing remarks on how wonderful their kids are doing.
I thought it said home address.
plenty of space. So, Serge, is it intentional that you made so much space? Because I would think that psychologically you would make you think, okay, I really need to get profound here as opposed to just like short term goals, like get better, you know.
Yeah, and then for me, it's I always tell them I want it to be detailed. I want it to be something. Don't tell me I want to be good at catching. You know, it's got to have some purpose to it. It's got to have some detail to it. So I don't need a novel, but I want it to be specific to what you want to do. And that's where we always talk about, like, the long-term goals. They're probably not going to move very much in the first year. Maybe a little bit. But those, for me, are like, where do you want to be maybe in a year's time? You know, the areas of focus, I always say, or, you know, if we try to do these once every 3 or 4 weeks, it just depends upon where we are in the season. But those areas of focus, if we've met twice, we should be shuffling those things. Those things should be shuffling out. And same with short-term goals. Those should be, you know, things within the season that we can deal with. So, but I want them to make sure that it's not just something general, that it's specific to them, specific to, if we're watching video, specific to a session, that we want to make sure that we can focus on it and that we can see improvement and we can see growth and we can then move it on to add something else.
Right.
You know, and you know, it's interesting, Sus, because I think a lot of times with young players or any type of players, you know, a lot of the times short-term goals, I don't want to say that they're delusional on their short-term goals, but what should be long-term goals, they look at as short-term goals and get frustrated that they haven't hit their short-term goals.
Yeah, but again, that's a conversation piece, you know, and with a younger player, they might not understand. And so, you know, there's room for error here, that you come in and a short-term goal isn't realistic and that's more of a long-term goal, but that's a conversation that you can have with them directly. I mean, the areas of focus, I love what Sergio said in the sense that, like, don't just put catching. I want to get better at catching. Like, this comes down to the self-coaching and self-awareness again. Like, okay, what do you mean by you want to get better at catching? Like, I want to work on shooting, getting more two hands to the ball, explosive, moving forward at a better angle. And, like, you know, and stuff like that, where it's more of you're breaking yourself down more. It's not so general.
Yeah. You know, so speaking of breaking down, let's go into some of these sessions right here. I'm going to just put that, mute that right there. So,
and hold the ball. You know me and holding the ball, Mike.
First off, Sergio, you sent me a few different sessions that are based on these IDPs. Kind of break down what we're going to be seeing here first.
Yeah. So the way our weeks work, what I like to do, especially on match day and match day plus one, is really use that for our number two, number three, and number four and get some individual work in. So our IDP days tend to be fairly technical because I think it's good repetition and I think it allows us to be able to really focus in on something where during the week it can be difficult to do that. Yeah. You know, and I think I am, and I always tell our goalkeepers, we are not going to train after the game. Because I've probably walked through every pass of the ball and mentally I'm not in a good place to train. So what I like to do with our goalkeepers is if we play at 7 o'clock that night, we'll come in at 10 and it'll be our 2, 3, and 4. And it'll be a 30-minute session. Not a lot of hitting the ground, pretty, but a lot of good reps, a lot of good pictures, and allow us to really kind of hone in on a couple things. And then match day plus one is another one where, again, we can really focus in on the individual pieces. And the tempo may be able to be a little bit higher there because, obviously, we don't have a game that day. And, you know, we can get a lot of work done. So that's where I really focus on the growth and development from an IDP perspective of, you know, our 2, 3, and 4 goalkeepers.
You know, as we switched out right there, which I think we're going to the next thing right here. Serge, one thing I wanted to say about that before we kind of move on to these next pictures right there is I've seen that in regards to coaches having players train after matches. And I've seen this at the youth level where they've done that. And I've also seen it where parents sign up their kids to train with private coaches after their game earlier that morning. And I always tell them, I am not going to do that. I'm not going to train your kid because they've already been through so much mentally. The last thing they need is for me is to get back in an environment where they're nitpicking and thinking about every decision they made in the game earlier that morning.
Absolutely. And I think this is, you know, Katie, our number one, is not involved in any of these sessions. These are strictly, and even with our number two, I'm very conscious if whoever's going to be on the bench that night of like making sure there's a minimal amount of hitting the ground. But for me, it's important in their development because if they don't train, then that's a whole other day off. And I don't think it does them any, it does them a huge disservice. And I think part of my job is to make sure that they develop. So, you know, I think using more of a technical perspective with the IDP sessions, for me, I think we can get a lot accomplished in a really short amount of time, which is important. So quality over quantity. And that way after the game, you know, if they do some running with the team or anything like that, I'm more than fine with. But I think for us to be able to have that time to focus is great. And the match day plus one, that's again where I can really delve into some things from an IDP perspective and give them even more individual attention to make sure that I'm helping develop the areas that they're focusing on. So the session you saw before we went to this one was just a simple crossing one, just working on timing, working on positioning and seeing the ball. The one we're watching right now was focusing on diving and their step and push, especially for Liv. That was something we really worked on. There were times where she kind of comes up to go down, so she wasn't able to get the drive and the push. So we really broke it down and allowed her to really get a good feel for that. For me, it's just that little lateral kind of shift and push. Uh-huh. So in here, you see it just touch the ball, step and drive. So she could really work on the push and we're going with two hands. I think that's something, especially for younger goalkeepers, the more you can always extend one hand farther than the other. And I think you see too many goalkeepers go with one hand. So we worked a lot this year on hands as a pair. And we were able to really put a good emphasis on that in some of these IDP sessions and see kind of, they're very simple. But I think the goalkeepers can feel and see the difference as we've gone through the session. And at the end, there's that confidence piece. We always end with something that's a little bit more live, but in the beginning pieces, it's very announced, and that's intentional because I really want them to think about the pieces and the layers that go with this. And this one in particular, it's about hands working together that touch the ball, get them moving and drive, and really work on that little step and shift. And that's why, again, the camera's positioned where it is because I want them to be able to see all the mechanics that go with it and feel comfortable with the mechanics as they go through it.
I want to bring this up real quick, Susk. You know, one of the things that, and first off, you know, I mean, I don't know if you notice it as well too at the youth level. I don't understand why kids won't shoot both hands. Like, I don't know if it's a timing thing, if it's just, from a subconscious standpoint, well, the hand that's closest to the ball is the one that's going to get it. Like, what do you think it is exactly?
I think it's a mental imagery thing. I think they see this outreach, say, and it's teaching. It comes down to teaching. You know, it drives me crazy. You can always shoot the one hand after the two hands go to the ball. First of all, when I break it down to goalkeepers, I'm like, go with one hand. That hand that's lagging is like an anchor. Right. You have you have to use all the momentum you can. You want to catch through a ball. right? So if you take both hands, that energy that comes through your whole body and everything, now you're just getting that much more power and everything going through the ball. Now, at the end of it, if you have to shoot the hand to reach further to tip, that's fine. But now look at what you can catch and look at what you can hold on to if you go with two hands. Like, you're not giving up rebounds. You're not giving up corner kicks. It might have looked pretty, but I know as a goalkeeper, had you gone with two hands and as a coach, you probably would have held that ball, you know, it's coaching and teaching. And you have kids with bad habits, change the habits, coaches out there. That's literally your job.
And you can control rebounds better. And I think that's a huge thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes we'll put little gates out on the corners of the sticks and call it like a parry zone, because if they're not going to hold it, they've got to push it away. And I think that's one thing that Katie has really, if you watch a lot of the saves that she makes, especially ones where she's had to parry, she parries them into good, safe areas. Very rarely do you find a second that she has to make a second save because she spilled it into a bad spot. And I think that's one of the things that Liv really improved on as well, was to be able to control that parry and put it somewhere where, one, I can see the rebound, so then now I can reposition well, but two, I've steered it into an area where it makes my life a lot easier, and I haven't spilled it into the middle where now it's open season on the ball. But also at the same time, I'm not just giving away a corner to give away a corner, because I've pushed it and I've gone beyond it. So I think, you know, going with two hands really allows you to do what you said, Saskia, especially if you can hold it. But also if it's at a pace where you can't, now I can steer it into an area where it's way more controlled and I can deal with the rebound.
Mike, I also think if you really get to, you have to see where the young goalkeeper's hand positionings are starting. Like, where are you starting, right? If your hands aren't in the proper position, if they're too wide, if they're dropped, you know, you get those young goalkeepers with their hands like low dropped. Now you've got to take that one hand and bring it all the way across your body to try to get that ball. And so hand positioning and that start position is important. So now they are, it's like tying a string in between your wrist and together. And so move them together, then you shoot the hand.
Yeah. I want to throw this question
now
up here.
We're just getting into a coaching session.
No, I know. And that's why we're going to get back on. That's why we're going to slightly get back on the topic right here, because we have a question from Bill Reno. And he goes, "Hey, Sergio, love the core you've built out there. Can you talk about tangible goals for goalkeepers who are still years away from being a true starter? How do you keep them hungry when minutes may be sparse?" It's a great, great question.
That's a really good question. And I honestly think it's the IDP. It's, can you see how you're getting better and setting targets? So if I take Hillary and Jordan, for instance, I think they're really good examples. Our goal was to prepare them to be successful in Australia. So our whole goal, especially towards the middle of the season on, when we knew they were going out on loan, was to make sure they were ready when they got to Australia. Jordan had a really good spell with Western Sydney. Did really well, made some big saves, came back in a really good place before she got injured. Hillary was goalkeeper of the year for Western and lost in the final. So I think it's a really good question, Bill. And I think especially in a league where there's no reserve league, you have to be creative. So what we did was we focused on that, and a lot of their, you know, their short-term goals and even some of their long-term goals were, I want to be prepared. I want to be confident when I get to Australia that now I can continue to progress the way I've been progressing. Or as Bloom likes to say, I don't want to kill it when I get to Australia. So that was one of Jordan's goals. But it's about making sure they're ready for Liv. It was to for her, especially in the first year, we knew she wasn't going to go out on loan, was to make sure she saw the progression. So for me, it was cutting clips in 11s for her. It was taking a look at how she was doing in small side and making sure she could see the progression and also talk to her about how she's evolved. Hey, you were struggling, you know, with the ball at your feet early on in 7v7, and when we played sevens, when we played small side, and how many times did, you know, you get stripped of the ball when you were trying to play, or how many times were you pressed? Now your first touch is good. You're being able to build out. How many goals were you, you know, how were you able to break lines in those situations? Or in close range, you're holding your shape much better. How many saves have you made now? Instead of going right into a spread, you've held, and now you've thrown a hand, you've gotten a chest on it. So kind of finding those moments and utilizing those, especially when we play 11s. We played a lot of 11s. So to be able to pull clips from that, I think allows that, because it is really difficult for your 2, 3, and 4, 2 and 3, because of the limited opportunities to be creative and how you show them their growth.
No. And by the way, the reason I took the videos off is because I didn't want Saskia's face to be covered by this question right here. It was your face was completely covered by the question.
Well, that's
and I was
okay.
Like, oh no, we can't have that. So Saskia, anything you want to add to that? I mean, obviously in the college environment, you can have, you know, a red shirt that's nowhere near ready to be playing.
And you usually do. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a shock value coming, even if you're ECNL, whatever, into the college, and depending the ranks of the college and everything. But I think that, you know, it is that long-term preparation and setting up those goals. And, you know, there's also the mental side to this that we have to talk about, because when you transition, whether it's college into the pros and you're used to being first team All-American and, you know, making such a difference for UNC or for UCLA or Rutgers or whatever, and then you're coming in and you're the three and you're sitting, and how are you dealing with that and preparing them mentally at the same time, which is why this is so important, and the communication and those long-term goals and short-term goals and understanding them is so important.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and I think one of the things too, in regards to this, like, is just that, like, youth coaches and college coaches, like, it's a little bit of a different environment, right, Sergio? So it's like, because I hear a lot of youth coaches, they'll talk to college coaches and they'll try to just replicate what they do. And it's a very different environment, because the youth game, you know, you can't have 7 different goalkeepers, all completely different levels of ability and play that you're all working with.
Yeah. And I think you, one of the things I love about goalkeeping is the ability for us to share sessions. But I think one of the things I hate is when you're just doing it just to do it without knowing the why. And I think that's the important piece. I think you have to understand the group that you're working with. And if you see something that you like, which is great, I mean, we all steal ideas from each other, but you've got to make sure it makes sense to the group that you're working with. And I think that's a really important piece. So I think you have to, you know, you have to make sure you tweak it to affect the goalkeepers that you're working with in a positive way. And not put them in a situation just because you saw an exercise that you liked, you're just doing it to do it, but then there's no understanding of why, and then there's no growth from the goalkeepers because they're just doing something to do it. And I think there has to be an understanding.
But that's what, you know, that's the difference I always call between a trainer, a goalkeeper trainer, and a coach, period.
Yeah.
You know, you can replicate some, set it up, and put them through the hoops and the jumps and the flags and then this and that and the other, but why? And you know, that's the difference between you being a trainer and you being a coach.
Yeah.
Sergio, do you have any advice, you know, as we start wrapping everything up? And I appreciate you taking the time in your off season now. I know you're not in Hawaii, like Liv, but
I know what, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I am hanging out in Louisville, Kentucky. That's about it. My off season.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Katie in San Diego, Liv in Hawaii, and you're in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, Jordan just got back from Italy, so like they're all Hillary's in Australia. You know, it's all good. All good.
Oh my gosh, the life of the goalkeeper coach. Any advice? Any advice for a new coach who's never put an IDP together?
Yeah, I think you have to think through what you want to get out of it, and how can you help your goalkeepers. And I think understanding the level of goalkeeper you're working with, and understanding where they are in their development, I think is a huge piece. Because I think you could use this from a rec goalkeeper, a goalkeeper who's a rec goalkeeper, to a goalkeeper who's a competitive goalkeeper, to a college goalkeeper, to a professional goalkeeper. But I think you have to make sure that the IDP is framed for them and where they are and where they could potentially go. So you make sure that they understand it. Because if you give them just an IDP to give them an IDP, I think you're not going to get anything out of it. It's not going to have any meaning to them. So I think it's got to be something that helps them understand where they are and helps them understand where they want to go, but also help them understand where, I just saw Bill with it.
Second and
how
last
they're gonna get
question.
There. And, yeah, And they have to be the driver in it. And I think that's the biggest piece, because too many times we as coaches drive everything, and maybe it's not what the player wants or what the player sees. So I think when you're putting these IDPs together, make them player led, even if it's going to be maybe painful in the beginning because you don't have a group that's going to be super interactive. But the more comfortable they get with it, the more interactive they're going to become. And that's, for me, is like when the magic happens, is when they completely become the driver in this. And you're just there to help them.
Absolutely.
And guide them a little bit. And that's the magic.
Absolutely.
By the way, this is the most open-ended question from Bill Reno.
We need a whole nother podcast on this.
I know. Can you speak on the future of goalkeeper development in the U.S.? What can the league/federation improve when it comes to progressing young goalkeepers? So do you have 3 hours, Bill?
Yeah.
A day?
Oh, my gosh.
thoughts, anybody? Either one of you? Why don't we start with Susk?
I think that if you talk about the past of our development, it was good. I think it's dropped off. I think more focus has to go back onto goalkeeper development at a younger age across the board. But I don't think at the same time you take away and say, okay, you know, you're going to be a goalkeeper. That's it. You know, I've never believed in that or anything. You have to find those players that really, this is the path that they want. You have to have the right coaches in place and the right development. I'd love to see coaches on kind of a same page across the board, like a real union in a sense, that we are like all kind of sharing ideas and kind of on the same page with development. It's not so sporadic and sparse and you're doing your thing and I'm doing my thing over here, especially when it comes to like developing future U.S. national team goalkeepers, future pro players, MLS and WSL. Like that's what I would like to see. Do I think that's going to happen in my lifetime? I hope so. But that is what I think needs to happen. And it needs to happen at the field player level as well.
Yeah.
Serge, anything you want to add?
Yeah. My big invest and educate. Invest in goalkeeping and educate. Because if you look at what England did in the FA and you look at how big their goalkeeping department is, now, obviously, I know the U.S. is bigger and more spread out, but we can get some licensing together, which would be fantastic. Because then I think to Susky, what you're saying, now we're all on the same page.
Yes.
Because we have something to work off of. And I think invest in having people who can help spread that and help teach that and help be there. Because right now, I think we're all doing a great job of helping each other and in our respective, you know, pods and doing things like this. But I think we have to have something that goes to everyone, but I think you have to invest in it and you have to educate everybody about it. And I think that's the challenge.
And I would love to see something as far as like, whether it's, you know, just, you're just bringing in, you know, you're identifying coaches around the country that, you know, if it's licensing and everything like that, but you're bringing in goalkeepers and there's no reason that you can't have goalkeeper camps themselves alone, like to identify not just, you know, I'm doing a camp over here, you're doing a camp, but like a tangible camp that you would, when you identify a national team players and field players and everything like that, there's no reason that you can't just do that for goalkeepers and start having a mass camp with different coaches. And now you're all integrating and you're getting the same philosophies down and now we're connected. Yeah.
You're so spot on, Susk. I never even thought about that, but like,
why,
you know,
not?
No, but like with these youth identification camps, it's 70 midfielders from Southern California and three goalkeepers.
Yeah,
exactly.
And they're getting their, and you know, it's my podcast, so they're getting their ass kicked, you know, and you're really not getting anything like that much out of it. And how are you, like, why not kick all the field players out, bring the goalkeepers in different age groups and have those identification camps just for goalkeepers and the coaches.
There needs to be more full-time goalkeeping staff within the federation, because right now there's not enough. And it's no disrespect to the people that are doing the stuff from the identification process, because I think there's some fantastic people involved, but there's nobody with a real goalkeeping background and there's nobody that's really focusing on the goalkeepers. And I think it's going to become a problem sooner than later. My hope is at some stage, especially for the NWSL, that there's a reserve league that comes in. So that
I absolutely agree.
Get more opportunities for not only goalkeepers, but for outfield players to play. Because the only way we all know you get better is through experience. And training, yes, is going to prepare you and make you better, but games are the ultimate teacher. So can we add another layer to it to allow us to let it grow? Because especially for the goalkeeping, I think it hampers their development because we have to win games. So there's not a lot of opportunity to just play goalkeepers to play goalkeepers.
Like, you know how I feel about the Super League? I feel like I feel like that should be the other league. Like, I can say what I want to say, but why not? Like, why? It's in the opposite season. Your goalkeepers can go to these teams and play, and it can be more competitive and everything. And you can move the players up and down, and they can come back in and play. And I'm just like, instead of competing leagues, like, I don't.
Look at what happened with NASL and MLS. That did not work out for NASL. Yeah. I'll tell you that a few years back. As we start wrapping up, and again, Serge, thanks for taking all the time. I think,
thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Really love talking with you guys. I really do. So thank you.
And the thing is that if you want to be able to, because the thing is, the great thing I love is we've been talking about, getting different perspectives, and getting feedback from different types of people. And for those of you guys who are not familiar, there is the Union Pro Mentorship Program through Union Premium. Sergio is a member of that. And he is available in office hours. Before we kind of share how you do this for maybe some people who might not be familiar, Serge, first off, why did you feel it was important for you to get involved in a platform like this?
I think it's for me, giving back and helping players and coaches is such a huge piece to me. I was very fortunate as a young coach to be part of the Soccer Plus community with Tony, which opened so many doors for me to work with so many fantastic people that at this point in my coaching career, I think it's really important to give back. And I think it's really important to not only help goalkeepers, but also help younger coaches that are trying to figure things out and that are trying to learn or trying to figure out what the best route for them to go is. So for me, it's about giving back and helping the goalkeeping community.
No, and by the way, everybody, it's really, really easy to do this. All you literally have to do is when you go on the landing page on the Union, whether it's on the desktop or on the mobile app, you just go to one-on-one coaching, click on that. Then you'll see all the different coaches or pro mentors, because there's sometimes players there too, that are available. And look, Sergio's right there. So he's available. I look and see. I'll look at this. He's available Thursday right now. He's available right now, guys. Just click on him right now. totally kidding. Then you click on Sergio. You'll see what his hours that he's available, the slot times, and then you press book now. And then it asks you for your identification to make sure that you are the actual person. And then you're good to go. That's it. That's it to do. By the way, guys, we've also set it up so that all the different pro mentors are available just in your feed. All you have to do is if you go to your feed and you want to filter based on the different mentors, their content, you can do it based on their content right here, which I believe Sergio is right there. So once Sergio gets content up there, no, I'm kidding. We have some content for Sergio ready to go. You can check out all of his stuff. It is very, very, very straightforward to do this. And if you guys do not know how to join, it is very simple. You literally get the link, or you go on the Google Play or App Store on the Apple, whatever that thing's called, and you can sign up and make sure you do Union Premium, guys. That's where all the good stuff is. Otherwise, you just get the engagement forum, which is still great to learn, but totally worth the $4.99 a month to be able to work with people like Serge or Saskia. And if they're not available, you can see if I'm available too. No, there's other great people too. Obviously very excited about this, and Sergio, massively, massively excited, that you're involved. And actually Liv Sicani from Racing Louisville's already been doing sessions for us as well too. So, which is pretty awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's great. I think a great opportunity to be able to help the goalkeeping community to have somebody with Liv's experience as well as a player too. Now from a youth player all the way to a professional player, to be able to pick her brain and talk to her, I think it's fantastic.
No. And by the way, Suska, I love the fact that you had an office hours with a parent yesterday. That's really cool. That it's not just youth players and coaches that are contacting, but parents as well. And parents, remember, there is a private goalkeeper community just for you on goalkeeper parenting in the platform that you can only join if you're a parent. No coaches allowed. That's what the admin says. No coaches, unless you're a goalkeeping parent coach, then I guess it's okay for you to join. obviously, guys, if you want to reach out to us for a guest suggestion or topic suggestion at Goalkeeper Podcast, or contact at InsideThe18Media.com. If you want to reach out to Saskia on the Union, it is at Saskia. Sergio, what's your handle? Is it S.Gonzalez? What is it?
SGGGK77.
SGGGK77. Obviously, you can reach out to me at Michael Magid. That's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out.
Later, bye, guys.